Yes. Good. It's a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, however you are listening to us, whether on the Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, wherever you get your podcast from. This is The Base Conversations with me, Teddy Abrokwa, Soundboy T. And today we have a very special guest. You know, we normally say special, but, you know, with extra sauce as well. You know, we have a legend here, someone who's had a foresight of the fashion industry, particularly. You know, you see the way I'm dripped in like this. He's wearing his own clothes. That is, they say you know when you made it yourself, you know, you make it look even extra good. But I'll find out if that's the same kind of treat that others get, you know, when they get on it. My guest today is none other than TPD, Tete Plaha Design, a legend. And I'll tell you why he is a legend. You know, he's been in the fashion industry for a very long time, more than a lot of you will be looking at, you know, looking at us on your screen thinking what is happening. If you're watching a clip of this or if you're listening to us, you'll be wondering how old is this man. You know, you might think he's a Methuselah age, but he's not, just that he got in the game very early. Tete Plaha, ladies and gentlemen, is on The Base Conversations, and today we're going to find out how he got in, you know, how he's managed to keep his creativity running till this date, you know, where he gets his ideas from and how he's able to transition from manual to automatic or from analog to digital, you know. So we got to find out all of that. I usually start with a prayer, you know, thanking God for our lives, you know, thanking God for the opportunity to be here, that we ask God to give us clarity, you know, to give us, you know, we're always going to tell the truth anyway, but at least He should give us the opportunity to remember what will be insightful to the next generation, what will be impactful to the next generation. You know, we thank Him also for looking after us. It's been a tough time. Tough times with the pandemic. A lot of businesses going under, but He's kept us going. We are here, good health, and we can only say thank you, Lord. And we pray that this conversation will touch the right people, that if you're looking to get into the fashion industry, you learn from this, because He's going to share a lot of the secrets, a lot of the stories behind the scenes, you know. TP, welcome to The Base Conversations.
Thanks, Teddy. I like all the accolades, man. They're making my head bigger than it normally is.
the thing is, you've also been picking awards, you know.
Yeah, awards. I haven't picked one in a while, actually.
But you've picked some in the past.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, congratulations, you know, for your longevity.
Man. Yeah,
you've been doing stuff futuristic.
Yeah.
We will get into how you started in the game, but I was reading. It's not even funny that, you know, the shooting in Mandalay. How long ago was that? Was it 2 years ago?
Oh, that was what, 3 years ago?
3 years ago. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, actually, 2017, isn't it? Yeah, 2017. So it's we are in the fourth year, but actually, yeah, it was around September.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, whoa.
What's happening to this man?
That's
one question is, what's he doing in Vegas to start with?
And well, then, if you're partying, then I don't know. Because this man is a party on his own.
Yeah, I know, man.
But I mean, TP, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man.
Are you, though?
Thank you. I'm great.
Before we get
I'm
into
good.
That story, how
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Mm. I'm good. By the grace of God, I'm fantastic, wonderful.
And yeah, we can't go on without asking about how the impact of the pandemic has been, particularly for the fashion world.
Absolutely terrible, I would say.
But we are still wearing clothes.
Yeah. The point is, people make clothes because they want to go out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, tell me, where are we going?
Mm.
From the bedroom to the kitchen, from the kitchen to the lounge, and then to the garden.
Yeah.
You can't do much, you know. So it's been terrible. I know a lot of industries have been affected. I mean, but fashion, it's been critical because absolutely no orders to start with. There were months and months without any orders, you know. So it's been extremely terrible. But I mean, we are surviving because things are beginning to pick up now. People are gradually organizing their weddings here and there, little events here and there, you know. So yes, it's beginning to pick up. But I mean, it was ridiculous just the way it crashed down, you know, like nothing at all was going on, you know. And that's why sometimes it's good to have sort of a backup, you know. Whatever you are doing, you should have a backup because you never know what will happen. You never know how things are going to go. You can't foresee the future. I mean, 2019, who would have thought that airlines will have their aircrafts just parked, no moving? It's just amazing. But at least we have life, so
that's the most important thing. And, and interesting point about the people not going out. But in the same way, I've heard other people into like printing of t-shirts and stuff who are really having a good season, you know, those doing like hoodies, and because people are home, so they're comfortable wearing those clothes, you know. So it's like once other side is down, other sectors are also booming, you know, which is
incredible. The world of t-shirt production and stuff like that, I wouldn't say it's generating much, but I'll say more to do with maybe production of face mask. That's rather
boomed, of course.
That's rather picked up a lot more because obviously with the pandemic, people will need that, you know. So yes, that area is certainly picking up. But t-shirts, I mean, when people are home, unless maybe they're on a Zoom call or they want to go on a Zoom call, but they don't care really much, man.
Much about.
Yeah. It's just easy.
Zoom call. I'm on a Zoom call with my shorts and
and my tie and the jacket, but you're wearing boxers underneath that.
I know that this Zoom, when the pandemic started, it really caught people out. You know, there were a lot of people that were like, they didn't know, maybe they forgot that the cameras were even on, and by the time they realized, the whole world is looking at them like crazy.
You know the interesting video I watched where this woman was on a work meeting and she actually rushed into the toilet forgetting that she was actually on a Zoom call. She rushed into the toilet with a laptop and placed it in the wrong area. A law was actually out there. and her work colleagues were just screaming, whatever her name was, I've forgotten the name, to be honest.
But I mean, whoever was on the call should have taken this person off.
Well, you know, she's got to turn off her camera. Zoom calls are in such a way that nobody can actually cut you off.
And the whole thing. You know, just keep everybody safe.
They were just screaming. spare everybody the agony of having to watch you.
Nah, man, that's the world we live in, and well, I think that's how it's going to be for a long time now.
I believe so.
So, man, what have you done to adapt?
Well, I've done other stuff, to be honest. I mean, personally, I do contract for banks and other financial institutions, which can be done in private, like. It can be done from home. So yeah, I do that on the side, and I do a lot of face mask orders as well for a lot of corporate institutions and stuff like that. Customized face mask. So yeah, that's gone pretty well, and a few weddings have trickled in, you know. So yes,
in terms of creativity.
Yeah. Well, in terms of creativity, I'm still creating new stuff, just that I'm not producing it straight away to put on the market, you know. But yes, sorry, I'm producing new stuff. I'm still producing new. I'm still creating new stuff. The fact about fashion is that as a designer, you don't run out of ideas and you shouldn't run out of ideas. So when an idea comes to mind, you put it down on paper. You know, you sketch it, you create your mood board for it. You know, the mood board will incorporate all the necessary ingredients that you need to put in to actually make the design come out the way you want it. So we're talking about textures, the various textures that you need to push into the whole design, the colors that you need to incorporate into it, shapes, sizes, whatever that you want in that specific design. Yeah, you will put it on your mood board. You know, you create the mood board ready for it. So whenever it's appropriate to then come out with your design, yeah, then you push that design.
So across. Typically, you do these designs. They don't come out immediately. You know, you phase them in. I mean, even without pandemic.
Right? Yeah. Well, it really depends, because fashion is how do I say? What would be the right word to use? It's very dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, it moves really fast as well. You know, so you although you can hold back on a few elements for a bit, you know, you need to note that certain trends and shapes will change with time.
Mm.
You know, so if your design, your specific design, has captured certain trends in it that you know will evolve within a short time, mm-hmm. then obviously you need to bring it out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There are certain times that I bring together very timeless designs. I know this is going to run the test of time. No matter how long it stays in my portfolio, definitely anytime I bring it out, it's definitely going to work.
Mm.
You know, those designs, yes, you can hold on for a while until the right time the that right you time believe for you, yeah. Yeah, it will be appropriate to bring it out, you bring it out. But
since my childhood, I've always wondered, you see a lot of fashion shows, which you have done a lot. I mean, yeah. We're going to get into how you started.
Yeah,
and cool. It will reveal itself. I don't want to jump ahead of time. Yeah, because you are doing incredible things that people are really catching on now with African designs. But one of the things that always fascinated me was, if you look at catwalks, like the kind of fashion shows, the kind of outfits that they parade there.
Hyperbolical, isn't it?
I don't see anybody wearing it on the street. I know
what you're saying. I know what you're saying, man. Yeah.
Why though? Why, Eddie? Why do they parade those usually hideous dresses?
Yeah. I like the fact that he called them hideous.
I'm going to just
call it. Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, that's understandable. And I know a lot of people share the same sentiments with you. But fashion is very broad. You know, sometimes a designer is bringing across or wants to put across a level of creativity that's deep down within them, you know, not necessarily to bring out clothes that can be wearable, I will put it,
okay.
You know,
okay.
It's not clothes that you either see them on the street or something, but the designer wants to tell a story with some imageries, you know, so he's brought all these structures in play to actually allow them to tell the story, you know. That gives you an insight of what the designer thinks and how he or she or what he or she believes in.
Okay.
You know, not necessarily making clothes for you to wear on the street, basically, but getting a bit theatrical with their imagination.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the sort of things that most often or sometimes you do see on the catwalk. You know, if you look at sometimes creations from Comme des Garçons, that's Reka Wakubu, Japanese, he's got a Japanese background basically. But what they do or what he wants to do is to tell a story using deconstruction, you know. Although those clothes he's done with the concept of deconstruction could not be wearable, someone else could pick that deconstruction and use it in a more effective and wearable collection. If I tell you that Alexander McQueen actually captures deconstruction and uses it in most of his collection, you will not believe it, but that's a fact, because his clothes are very wearable. You know, they are outstanding, they are wearable, and I mean, aesthetically, they are very pleasing to the eye. So you will say, oh no, how come Reka Wakubu has got maybe a suit sleeve hanging down, a pair of trousers, and calling this deconstruction? However, Alexander McQueen has got, he may so rest in peace, it wouldn't be good for me to talk about him without saying that anyway, because he's no longer alive. But how come he has actually got this creative, beautiful, aesthetically pleasing outfit and is still using deconstruction. But if
what's
you,
deconstruction?
Deconstruction is the process of breaking apart, you know, to create. So breaking apart elements of an outfit to actually create a unique and outstanding collection.
Okay.
You know, so different designers use it in very different ways. You know, Vivienne Westwood also uses the concept of deconstruction to create marvelous and beautiful outfits. You know,
where do we draw the line between madness and fashion? I know you know,
it's art, man. Art is broad.
Let me just go. We often hear about Kanye West.
Yeah.
Kanye
is crazy. Sorry.
So there is a chap in Ghana called the Zara Man.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That, you know who he is?
Osibo. Osibo. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I know Osibo. Yeah.
So he's very passionate. I mean, I like
the passion,
you know, and he's very, you know, very spiritual, very deep-minded person. Yeah. You know, I enjoy his videos. You know, but there are certain times that his fashion sense confuses me.
Yeah. I know what you say.
But his point is, it's a matter of you know, being confident. That's what fashion is about. That's his argument.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, not precisely the words, but that's the kind of argument that he's trying to put across. That yes, you know, you've got to set the trend, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what fashion. But I'm asking you, you a designer.
What's my take on it?
He's a fashionista. Yeah. Where do you draw the line? Where's the line between madness and creativity?
Very good question, to be honest. I mean, this is not the very first time anybody is asking me about Osibo. Because, I mean, I know Osibo personally as well.
Okay.
You know, And I do get a lot of queries, and I do get a lot of pictures being sent to me. Hey, Tete, what's this? What do you think about it? I said, calm down, guys. Take it easy. Yeah. But like you have said, fashion is what you make of it, you know. And I think everybody must understand their personality and what is suitable for them. For me, maybe I might not wear a skirt, you know, because maybe my personality does not actually, or it's not suitable, basically, for me, you know. But for me, aesthetics forms a very important part of the sort of fashion I want to depict out there. And if I create something and I take a look at it and it's not pleasing to my eye, I wouldn't put it out there. There are times that I've designed stuff that I didn't think was appropriate or that I didn't think was desirable, and I don't put it out there, you know.
Is it on moral grounds, or does that come in?
And well, morality. Yeah, well, I wouldn't really say on moral grounds, because I go extreme. I do go extreme sometimes. Okay. Yeah. And especially when it comes to certain revealing outfits, I do take it to the next level, you know. So I wouldn't be on a moral high horse and say no, morally I want to do this right. No, as a fashion designer, I mean, my job is to bring art to people for them to be pleased with what I'm showing out there, you know. And like I keep saying, aesthetics form a very important part of my works, you know. So if it's not pleasing to me, I wouldn't push it on you, you know. I want something that gives me that satisfaction, that look, I'm happy with what I see, you know, it looks pleasing to my eye, and for that matter, yes, I want to see it on you. That's how I go about my fashion. So I don't follow fashion just blindly. No, for me, I do fashion in a way that pleases the eye. That's what I believe in. But every designer has his own concept or his own relationship with fashion, you know, just like any individual, you know, or any fashionista. I mean, people in fashion can have their own relationship with fashion.
Yeah, true.
You know, but it's what makes you happy as an individual, what you're bringing out. How does it make you feel? Will you feel happy seeing it on other people?
Yeah.
That's how I see my concept.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we're here with Tete Plaha, you know, TP Designs, TPD. Have I got that right?
That's correct.
That's correct. Yeah, he's wearing his own clothes, you know.
Yeah. He's I started wearing my own clothes from the age of 12.
Age of 12.
Yeah.
That is incredible. At the age of 12, let me see, what was I doing? I mean, my fashion sense, I would love the good political suit, as we used to call it back then. If you grew up in Ghana or in Africa, then you would understand what that means. Political suit.
Yeah.
So it's like, how would you describe
short sleeve,
that?
Yeah.
Or even long sleeve, depending on what you go
political
for.
Political suit, but yeah, it's not really a suit, but it's got actually the...
elements of a suit.
Yeah, it's got the sleeve, you know, sort of twisted in a way to make you feel like a suit. But I think it's very appropriate for our weather as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, if you compare it to suits, so it's got certain elements that makes you feel that, yes, this could... It looks formal, basically.
Yeah,
however, it's not a suit because it's not lined, you know, and it's more weather-friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when we are doing our fashion as well, that's one thing we need to consider.
Consider.
The environment we live in and how suitable this sort of clothing or these sort of clothing are for the environment.
So basically, I think the most important question anyone listening or watching this would want me to ask is, you know, how did you get in? It's as simple as that. You know, how on earth at 12 years... You want to design your own clothes? Because at 12 years, I think the most I wanted to do was to just kick football around or play some counters ball. Counters ball, if you don't know what that means, is we use the cork.
I know, man. I know.
Of drinks, you know, when you...
Oh, play a lokoto.
You know,
but that counters ball thing, what did we used to call it back in the days? I forgot the name. The Countess.
Countess ball,
You knock. Oh, that's what we called it.
Countess ball, football.
Or play Charlie.
We set up like a football team and then, just do it.
Yeah.
So, what, 12 years old, what year are we talking about?
What got me into it?
This is like 1989. You were 12, okay. So what got you into that? Or what made you design your first clothes?
Good question. I always say, necessity is the mother of all inventions, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. So when you need something and you believe there are obstacles stopping you to get it, you have to find ways of going around it. I mean, I would say I grew up in an environment where sort of fashion plays a role in our lifestyle. I mean, the sort of surroundings we live in or the people we grew up with, you know, one way or the other, they influence us without even us realizing how much of an influence they have on us, you know. I grew up with a mother who was very fashion conscious. You know, she didn't sew anything. She was a beautician. She does makeup, hairdressing and stuff like that. Dresses bright and stuff like that. But she was so conscious of how she looks or what she looks like when she goes out.
Mm.
She is the sort of person who will say, well, I'd rather be the best dressed than the worst dressed. You know, so you can see how critical she is when it comes to dressing. Mm. You know, whenever we go to her seamstress or dressmaker, she's the one telling them how and where she wants certain things to be, where she wants her pleats to be, her gathers to be. She doesn't want things that everyone is wearing. You know, she always wants to stand out.
Mm.
You know, so in a way, those little things that she talks about, or those little things that she did, was obviously having an influence on me without even realizing that.
Yeah.
But for me, back then, she used to alter her outfits, like her old pair of bell button trousers. You see how big those 60s bell buttons were, you know. So in the 80s, she used to alter them and get it done into like normal trousers for us, my brother and I, or shorts and stuff like that, you know. So what happened, we were due for a party, I think, over the weekend, and I wanted to wear something new, but I'm the type who I thought I wouldn't bother the same person. I mean, single mother, two boys, you know, everything going mom, you know.
Yeah.
So let me try a hand. She's got this old Singer machine. You see the hand one?
Singer, yeah. My auntie is a singer, so I know Singer.
You know that old Singer one? Yeah, okay, with so it.
There's another one you can
do. Yeah, there you step on. No. She had a hand one, you know. She actually had it when she got married, you know. It was part of her dowry. Yeah, exactly, the bride price, those things.
She's into fashion, so yeah, it makes sense.
No. Those times, although she doesn't sew, she wasn't into fashion or anything of that sort. But those, back in the days, I think when...
It was a requirement.
That the man brings you a sewing machine so that you actually mend his trousers for him or something. Ghana life back in the days, man. When he's going to work and his trousers is ripped off, yeah, that's the responsibility of the woman back in the days.
Yeah.
So she had it there and I thought, yeah, I could make good use of this, you know. So I took one of her old clothes. I said, look, I want to use this for a top for myself, you know. She's like, okay, cool. You can, but you've never done it before. So I'm going to get this seamstress of mine. She'll come down and support you.
Okay.
But stop on me. I don't listen very much, do I?
That's true.
But now I listen a lot more, man. Yeah. That was back in younger days. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I decided to cut the outfit before the seamstress got there, you know. But fortunately, when she got there, she was like, well, looks like he's done the right thing, so let him continue doing what he's doing.
How did you measure yourself, though?
Well, I didn't measure myself. I know myself. So,
that's a good answer. Yeah. That's a really good answer. Yeah.
Actually, I didn't actually measure. I didn't use a tape measure to do that top. You know, I was just cutting, considering what I look like and where it would be on me. So I cut and put it on myself and see, oh yeah, it's actually right for a front. So the same measurement for the back, you know, this will work. It wasn't the most pleasing, but it was all right. I got away with it, you know, and it was suitable for a party, you know. And I mean, interestingly, after I made mine, my brother thought it looked nice.
He wanted one.
And I made it for him as well. Yeah, I made it for him as well. So that was how it all began, with those two tops. Mine was turquoise and his was pink.
Okay.
Real men wear pink.
At that time, you know, pink wasn't like, I mean, now we wear a lot. Like men wear a lot of pink, you know. Back then it was really so.
Yeah, it was all right though.
Colorful. I mean, for him, you're using mommy's clothes.
Exactly. So you don't have much of an option. you just have to use what you've got.
Wow.
And interestingly, I've got the picture.
You still have it?
I still have the picture of it, man.
Your first clothing.
Yeah. I still have a picture of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I have a cousin. Mm-hmm. You probably would even know him because he worked on the recent KOD's Rhythms.
Rhythms and Runway.
Kunto.
Oh yeah, I met him there.
Yeah, that's my cousin.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, he's really good. Yeah. So good chap.
Yeah. I mean, when we were growing up, I was into music. So, yeah.
The funny thing, I was born on 7th December, which is quite a unique day because not many people were born on that day.
Yeah.
He happens to be 7th December born.
Yeah, that's true.
I saw that on KOD. I was like, damn.
Yeah. No, that's my blood cousin. That's my mom's brother. And interesting. So he used to do similar things. I mean, normal, when we all have like t-shirts and stuff, he would cut his own, make weird stuff, you know.
Exactly.
And now he's making like dope suits and
absolutely, and stuff. Absolutely. So that's how creativity that stuff, man.
You can see from
childhood.
From childhood,
absolutely.
What this person is going
to come out to be. Yeah.
Like you said, you use your vision to kind of measure stuff. But have you, at that time, what was the motivation? I mean, I know you've talked about mom's style, but was there sort of anyone influence who's actually doing something like that in your area, into fashion or something like that?
Not necessarily, to be honest. Yeah, not necessarily. somebody in particular, but because of what I see and the sort of interest I had, and I was very artistic as well. I draw very well. Trust me, you can't be a designer without drawing. You gotta be able to transcribe those ideas in your brain onto paper. So if I see somebody who says, "Oh, me, I'm a designer, but I can't draw," you are not.
Can you learn?
You can learn to draw, but not a drawing.
Can you learn to be
a fashion designer?
You know, a lot of people that I speak to that are into stuff like that. You can tell from the get-go. Like the way people learn to play football, you know, even though it's a talent, you know, some people learn and they develop that skill.
Yeah.
You know, can you do that with fashion without struggling, basically?
Yeah. Well, the point is you need to have it in you.
In you.
Yeah. And a lot of people who attempt or learn to be designers already have it in them. They just add up what they already have in them. You know, the interest is generated from the idea of their artistic, you know, their creative. So they build up on that creativity, you know, and then learn a lot more to top up what they already know. It's just like football.
Football, yeah.
I mean, if you're not a good footballer, you can never be a good footballer, no matter how well you train or how hard you work. You'll be useless as ever, you know. Yeah, but yeah, it's the same thing. You got to have the talent and then build up on the talent, you know. So the artistry must be there, you know. You must have the artistic bits in you, you know. You know how to draw very well, and then you must have a critical eye for clothing as well, because the idea is not just about, oh, me, I like to dress, or I like to look good, or so I can be a designer. No.
It's not it.
Because it's deeper than that. You know, the idea that, one, you need to have an artistic eye, an eye to create, an eye to develop new things. Now you need to have a critical eye for quality.
Yeah.
Because you are not coming out with anything that's shoddy. That's one challenging thing in our Ghanaian society at the moment, you know, that people are not paying that close attention to the quality of outfits, you know, and it's been challenging for quite some time now, you know. So it's leading a lot of Ghanaian fashion houses and Ghanaian production bases to sort of chase tailors and dressmakers from outside Ghana, because they believe the a lot of the Ghanaians are not producing to the standards that we require in the fashion industry, or to build the fashion industry.
And who said Ghanaian standard? I mean, apart from when you see quality, you can see it.
Exactly.
But you know, with like drinks, for instance, there is standard boards.
The FDA, exactly. FDA, exactly. You know. In Ghana, yeah. But it looks like in the fashion industry, there isn't. And that's one aspect of the Fashion Council in Ghana currently. That's one agenda that they're trying so hard to push across.
Mm.
And I think they need the support of the government to be able to push that agenda across. Yeah. That, look, we must ensure that certain standards are maintained, certain qualities are maintained across board. So when someone gets clothing from Ghana, they can be assured of a specific standard or quality, you know. And that actually makes our clothing appealing to the world.
Mm.
It's not just the beauty of the clothes, but the actual quality to meet industrial standards worldwide. It's very essential to our society as a whole.
And the industry as well.
In the industry.
So when did you have that epiphany? Like, when did you realize that this is my calling? Because I mean, now you do it full time. Designing your own clothes at 12 years old.
Yeah.
I've seen Instagram posts where you did a 30-year difference. You know. From your
12 to 42. I'm 45 now. Anyway. Yeah. You know, 12 years to 42.
We will come to Accra Life very soon.
Cool.
And then I'll tell you how I found out about you.
Okay.
You know, back then. But when did you feel that, have that feeling that this is really, this is my
what
job?
I want to do.
Mm.
Okay. And in all honesty, it's been in me. I wouldn't say there's been a specific time that I've thought, this is the time I want to be a designer. I've got to be.
To take it as a profession or take it as a job.
I think it came by accident, to be honest. Because when I complete, in fact, just before I completed 6th form, I was...
You went to Achimota.
Yeah, secondary school.
Very good secondary school. If you're not familiar with the Ghana settings. It was a school built by the British.
It was built on the three H's, the principles of the three H's. But we'll come back to that Achimota.
Yeah, of course.
So when I... In fact, I was doing it whilst I was there. You know, when I started, I didn't get a lot of encouragement from my mates. They used to... take the mickey out of it, because I mean, Achimota back in the days, obviously you will accept that it was a lot of what bourgeois. We call dadabies. Bourgeoisies. You know, it's not kids who will be making Taylors. Their own uniforms. Come on, man. What are you talking about? You saw your own clothes? They'll laugh at you. It's funny, man. Yeah, it's a joke. Okay, so they took it as a joke for a while, you know. And in all honesty, when I started, because I didn't have any formal training and stuff like that, but I was actually practicing and polishing on what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff I did back in the days were not as accurate as it should have been, mm-hmm. you know, but it was just trial period. And I mean, as a young student, school those days, I make my own school uniforms and my schoolmates will take the mickey out of me. Are you serious? You make your own school uniform? Let's go to this tailor. I mean, there were popular tailors back in the days who were making clothes and stuff like that. But I didn't bother. I didn't mind. One thing about me, I'm really confident with what I do, you know. So I wouldn't let any child dampen my spirit of what I want to do, you know. Mm. I mean, for me, one, I'm supporting my mother by no... getting here to find a tailor or paying a tailor to
do your clothes,
do my clothes. Mm. And two, I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's such an achievement when I'm able to come out with a nice pair of shorts or a shirt that I can wear for classes. So it was a good thing. So it was challenging at the time. But by the time I got to Form 4, Form 5, I became that good that some of my schoolmates were actually bringing their stuff for me to do.
You know,
they start, of course, man. you know, some of my classmates, they actually nicknamed me 10. 10 for 10,000, because that's how much I charge. Everything was 10,000, man. I was just a kid trying to get some money. Yeah. I was a kid trying to make some money, man. Yeah, you know, yeah, so... Yeah. Anything out of my, just give me 10,000. I'll do it. So, there was this family. They are Mati Amar family. Their dad was a physics teacher in the school at the time. And yeah, the whole family used to bring their clothes to me to make for them. So the eldest of the family, Anna, she started this 10 syndrome.
Oh, okay.
she thought, it was funny that you charge me 10 cities for my own dress, and then you charge my brothers 10 cities for their shorts. Anyway, you are 10. But yeah, it was funny around the time. But by the time I got to 6th form, like, a lot more of my mates have gained confidence in what I was doing, to the extent that we had some visitors from the Ballard High School in the USA. They came on an exchange program in Ghana, and we decided to host a fashion show for them, sort of entertainment, you know, school time entertainment for them before they go back. So
obviously you organized it.
Oh, well, it was organized by the entertainment prefect at the time. Oh, you know, his name is Daniel Supe. Yeah, we call him Ahoy back in the days, you know. So he organized it. But then he was the one who said, look, TP, this is a good opportunity to display some of your clothes. But the point is, I didn't have any clothes to display other than my own personal clothes that I've made, a few clothes that I'd made for my mom, and a few that I'd made for her friends as well. So I was like, okay, let me go speak to these people, my mom and her friends, and see if they will give me the clothes to use for a fashion show. My mom was like, yeah, brilliant idea. Actually, my mom was the size of a model. She was waist 32 at the time. So yeah, her clothes could fit a lot of my models anyway. So, and most of the stuff I made was for her around the time. So it was really easy just getting most of hers and a few other models. And the good news was Nora Bannerman also presented some clothes. She was big in fashion at the time.
Yeah, I remember that name, she was already
on the market, you know. So, and her daughter was in my school as well. Her daughter was in Motown. She was a year behind me.
Okay.
So yeah, she helped us with some collection. Maoli Okujeto also helped us with some collections. And
at that time, was Maoli?
Yeah, Maoli was also already big on the market.
On the market,
Yeah, those guys were already on the market. I was the only one in school, man. Yeah.
Maoli made me a t-shirt that I still haven't picked up. MK,
bless you, man. Shout out to me, man. Yeah. So basically, after that show, like, it kind of gave a lot more of the students an idea that, oh, this quad a potential, you know. So why not take this the next step? Why not take this the next step? So after sixth form, one of my mates, she used to live in Tema at the time, and she was like, look, Tete, let's come together. I know this woman, it's a designer in Tema. We can put something together and have a fashion show. I'm like, yeah.
What year was that?
This was 1994.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 94. Yeah. So I'm like, cool. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'm happy to do it. So I went to Tema to see them, the models, the lady and stuff like that. But unfortunately, I wasn't very much impressed with the caliber of models they had at the time. There was, because, you know, I always keep saying that I have a vision of how I want things to look. Aesthetics plays a very vital role to me. So if I don't see the right thing, I don't think it should be done, you know. So I spoke to Nana about it. I'm like, to be honest, I'm not very pleased with this, you know. So I'm going to have an issue with it. So either we change it or I have to back out. But at the same time, I had already gone to GTP. I walked into the offices of Deborah Corte back in the days. I was like,
so GTP for non-Ghanaians is a textile company.
Yeah, exactly. It's a textile company. Even for Ghanaians right now, it's no longer GTP, is it? And they went from GTP to UAC Textiles, and then they moved on to Woodin. They call themselves now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it is Woodin now. Yeah. So I went to see her. I was like, look, I've just completed sixth form. This is what I do. And she was like, oh, actually, I know you. I know your mom.
Oh.
You know? Yeah. So she's been wearing some lovely outfits that she claims you make, you know? So, yeah, if you can do that, yeah, I'm happy to get you some fabrics. So she gave me quite a few yards of fabrics. I think it was 20 sets of 6 yards, Ghana. Yeah, so 6 yards, 20 pieces of 6 yards, variety of fabrics, different fabrics. So she said, look, these fabrics are not selling on the market, you know. So I want you to put together ideas and styles that will actually make the fabric sell, you know. And for me, I like challenges, you know. Yeah. So for me, that was a good challenge. So I took the fabrics, hoping that I was going to have this show. And then I went and I was disappointed. So I was like, what am I going to do? But around the same time, I was in constant communication with Steven Caesar. I don't know if you remember Steven Caesar. He was presenting Smash TV at the time.
Okay. Yeah, Steven was on Smash TV.
And Smash was being produced by Nana Champon back in the days, 94.
What, Nana Champon?
Nana Champon. Oh, not the musician.
Not the musician, of course.
Yeah, the producer. Yeah, he was.
Because that was around the time Eddie was also working on Smash.
Eddie Blay, Cindy, Mitch Breedy. Yeah. That's a squad, man.
Good old television days.
Tell me about it.
Good old television days.
Yeah. And Caesar said, you know what? I'll speak to Nana Champon. In fact, I have already spoken to him, basically. So Nana wants to meet you. So I want to meet Nana Champon. Nice guy, man. Great guy. We had a good conversation. And he was like, you know what? I can help with this show. But I know the lady in charge of the Golden Tulip. I think she was in charge of banqueting at the time. Yeah, sure. She was a high profile lady at the time.
Very good contact to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I went in there, lovely woman, Benny Brown. Oh, fantastic woman. I went in there, she was like, oh, damn, I was in Motown as well, man. So you feel more at home with, you know, people who sort of have a similar background to you. You know, so she was like, yeah, I can get you on a show in here this December for the Ministry of Tourism. I was like, yeah, I'm happy to
even bigger.
Even greater, man. Yeah, it's going to be by the poolside. And I said, to be honest, I've got only two models. That's my brother, Adipla, and Elisa Olympio. Just like, don't worry, I'll get you all the professional models.
Oh, dear.
In Ghana at the time. Yeah. In those days, the professional models were Clive, Wendy. You know Wendy? She's Wendy Latizan now.
Oh, yeah.
Irene, you know, Jamila. Pretty Gang. They were good. So, Benny called all of them. She was like, look, I've got this young guy. He's good. He's talented. I want you guys to come meet him. So they all came over. And you know what? We just gelled like that. Because, I mean, I'm pretty easygoing as well.
I get on
with everybody. So people who just get close to me find it really easy to relate to me. Mm. So although all these models were way older than me, I mean, we just formed a bond, you know. And Eugenia Pia was like our age group as well. And she was part of the models. And I mean, we became sort of a family after that show, you know. And that was like the big break. And just after I did that show, what happened actually when I was doing the show was that it was a requirement from GTP at the time for them to inspect whatever you're producing with your clothes before the show.
Oh.
You know, so this they sent the marketing manager himself to come to my home. I was then working in my mom's garage. I was using that as my production base, Charlie. So they sent the marketing manager over and he came to inspect what I was doing. And the good thing is he was so impressed with what I was doing that he made a decision to let me use those clothes for their upcoming show, which was supposed to be in Takoradi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And after that, they were going to take me around all the other regions in Ghana, you know, doing fashion shows, using their fabrics to promote actually their new collections, including old fabrics that were not selling, you know. Because he said he was very impressed with the fact that I actually created very modern and dynamic styles with those fabrics, you know. Because around the time, a lot of those fabrics were mainly used for funeral wear.
Funeral wear or older women.
Older women, yeah. And then that's me creating short flare mini skirts with wrap tops and funky ladies outfit with bell buttons. I mean, I just went crazy with those things. I just brought out a whole lot of ideas, you know, very young, vibrant ideas with their collection, you know, with their fabrics. Yeah. So it sort of cemented my existence with the company, you know. So when they were just about to launch a new fabric, the Ahinfie fabric, that was the very first time they decided to go with glittery ink. Sort of they used the gold and the silver shine on the fabrics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the very first time they started that thing. That was Ahinfie. So they decided to let me launch it. And what hotel was it? You know the hotel that was... Charlie, my brain is going dead now. There was this new hotel at the time that was opposite the police headquarters. I've forgotten the name. Completely forgotten the name. It was right opposite the police headquarters. Ah, the name is just gone.
I mean, that's where they were launching it.
That's where they were launching Ahinfie. So we went there to do it. And the good thing is, at the time, some scouts had come from the US. They were looking for a designer to support Anna Getane. Anna Getane was an Ethiopian model. She was an Ethiopian supermodel back in the days. She did a lot of big shows with Naomi Campbell and stuff like that. So Anna was organizing an event in Paris at the time called Afrique Mosaic. You know, this was a charity show, a charity event to raise funds for the Ethiopian Children's Fund. You know, so these guys were in Ghana at the time and they saw my collection on the stage and they were like, we need to speak to this guy. So they spoke to me, gave me Anna's contact, you know, and basically that's how a whole lot started getting like sort of international exposure.
Oh, okay.
I started getting a lot of exposure in Ghana as well because all the GTP shows were from one region to the other and it was all being captured by GTV. You know, at the time GTV
was the only TV station.
You didn't have much to watch back to watch GTV.
No, nothing else.
So yeah. So that's like how it all started and everybody started wondering, who is this young guy? Who is Tete Plaha? That's him. Okay. And he escalated to the next level.
Because when I saw you, I mean, heard of you, I mean, at that time, there wasn't any social media. So everything was pretty much word of mouth or, like you said, you see on TV.
Yeah.
Or if you happen to be at the shows, you know.
Yeah.
Music and the fashion world where has always been, you know, it collides.
We always collide, or we always marry.
There will be events, maybe you go to Kingsby Hotel or you go to some of these places and then they will have to come and showcase a bit of money.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
That's how I got to find out about you. And at the time I thought you were older. Like, you know, so to find out that, you know, this is somebody that's within our age range, you are senior, but you know, within that range.
Yeah.
It's like, it was so fascinating. But what was even more striking was the fact that you were pushing the African way.
Yeah.
What is, at that time it wasn't cool at all.
Yeah.
But now everybody is wearing it, you know.
Yeah.
Did you see that day coming?
Did you see this day coming? I did, to be honest. If I say I didn't, I'm lying to you. I actually saw it because I'm very passionate about whatever I do, you know. So when I try to put something out there, I'm putting it there to be pleasing, you know, to the extent that I believe this will capture a whole lot of audience and it will get to the state that people who have previously resented it or looked down on it will see the beauty of it one day. So it doesn't come as much of a surprise to me, but it's what would I say? I'm loving it. Yeah, I love the fact that, well, a lot more people have actually warmed up to it.
Yeah.
Because it's really essential to be proud of what we can call our own.
Yeah.
You know, what we do, what we produce, what we love, basically.
So, I mean, now it's important than ever, to be honest. Yeah. It's so beautiful to see the younger generation, our generation, everyone embrace the fashion. People are daring now, you know, the producers are, the designers are daring. They place quality on it. Something that you've been doing from day one, you know, pulling out of stuff because you felt the quality wasn't good enough for you. Yeah. But this is a man, we're here with Tete Plaha, you know, legendary, you know, you've earned that, you know, legendary status. You actually designed for the first lady, former first lady of Ghana. May he rest in peace, Flight Lieutenant Jerry John Rawlings, is Nana Kunedu. That's what I read, that, you know, you were the go-to man.
No. I actually designed for Zanetto.
The daughter?
Yeah, the daughter, Mrs. Rawlings, she actually attended a couple of my shows.
Okay.
And I think that's the reason a lot more people associate her with me. You know, yeah, because I think the last show I did in Ghana before I did Rhythms on the Runway and then... the other one, what was it? Mr. Model Africa. Yeah. Anyway, that was the show I did 1999, just to usher in the millennium.
you know. And I mean, for me, my idea for that show was to present a collection that will kind of give a new perspective to the future in fashion in Ghana, you know. So I took the opportunity to invite some really prominent people in society, and she was one of those.
Oh, okay.
And she honored the invitation, and I was very appreciative that she honored the invitation, you know. And there were others, like members of the diplomatic corps, and my mom was alive at the time. She was there.
Oh, may she rest.
That's it. Yeah,
so may she rest.
You know. And I think that's the reason a lot more people associated with me.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, the one I designed for was rather Zanetto.
The daughter?
Yeah, yeah.
The daughter. Was that in school days or?
No. I do it. Yeah, I do it even now.
Oh,
yeah,
you still
yeah,
do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, even
right.
now. Yeah.
So she the only high profile politician or?
Yeah, quite a lot of high profile politicians, to be honest. Because, I mean, what I would say is, quality always sells itself, you know. And back then, when I was really young and just doing it for my mom, whenever she goes out with my stuff, she comes back commending me, saying, well, she had a lot of credit for what she wore today, you know. A lot of people were saying they liked it and stuff like that. And I always thought, oh, well, there she goes again. She wants me to make her another one, isn't it? But then when I started wearing my own stuff to places, like, I started experiencing the same thing, you know. So people see me and what I'm wearing, and then they give me credit for it. And then I tell them, no, I did it. So I was on a Tulip once, and this ex-president of Zimbabwe, Kenan Banana.
Oh.
Yeah, he was there at the time, and he just saw me in the lobby. I was like, nice shirt, I like it. I said, hey, I did it. He said, what? You did that? Yeah.
Did you know who he was at the time?
No, I didn't know who he was at the time. Yeah. Tulips got all sorts of people.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. Yeah. Golden Tulip Hotel.
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it was only 5-star hotel in Ghana at the time.
Yeah, at the time, yeah.
Yeah.
They make banging breakfast,
yeah,
though.
It's good. Two dates, yeah, you know. Yeah, they got some good stuff out there.
So, what, he became a client? So,
he became a client.
Is he still alive? Or
No, he died ages ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. PV Obing as well. Yeah, he was a really high minister. Profile client. Yeah. Oh, he was brilliant, man. Yeah, he was brilliant. I mean, I did everything that he wore back in the days, man. Yeah. OPV wouldn't buy clothes from anyone Spiel else. Well. Yeah. Was that?
Spiel Gabra.
Yeah, Spiel Gabra. Yeah,
so
I did.
You were responsible for that. You know,
the tunic that he was wearing. Interestingly, I didn't make any of those tunics for him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I did some African shirts for him back then, but none of those
jokes. So you've been enjoying the political landscape in the fashion world for a long time. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say enjoying it, but
well, 10,000 then, you know, put it, yeah. 10,000 then. So you can do the maths.
No. Trust me, it got higher than that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 10,000 then. School days.
I think 10,000 is a CD now.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
I mean, for a schoolboy, it was all right.
Good money.
Because, it was good money,
good
man.
Good money.
Yeah.
So, what would you say has been the highlight of you? And you've done a lot of things, but what stands out for you throughout these years? Because you've done well over 30 years
consistently.
I'll come to another important point that, you know, I want to find out, you know, in terms of how you've been able to keep reviving yourself, you know, you've kept yourself relevant to date. But what would you say has been the biggest triumph for you in terms of your fashion career?
Well, to be honest, for me, always being able to sustain my name and present clothes that people still love is always the highlight of my job, because I find a lot of joy in people buying into what I do. You know, it gives you the hope and feeling that
yes, your work is being appreciated, and there's nothing as good as that. You know, so increasing your clientele, getting the right clientele, getting the clientele that matter to actually buy into what you do, I think for me is the highlight of my job.
But how have you kept, what motivates you to be relevant?
I money, mean, money.
Money. I like the honesty there.
Yeah, you need to make some.
Because one of the biggest challenges for people from the, you know, the older generation is making the transition into, you know, the trendy stuff, you know, how to keep evolving.
Okay.
Has been technology being one of the factors,
I think for me, it's because I started really young, you know, so stuff that are being done now are sort of stuff that I can easily relate to because it's still within my age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an old man, basically. I'm not out of modern stuff. Yeah. You know, I'm still very young and vibrant.
Of course.
So I can relate to a lot of new ideas coming in, you know. And in Ghana they will say, "Oh, I nagboku." You get what I'm saying? Yeah, like you think how do I translate it literally?
You're still current.
It's still sharp. Your fingertips are still sharp. So you still have the
relevance.
Exactly. You still have the stride, basically, to be able to churn out the right stuff. You know. So
we're here with Tete Pla, who's a fashion designer. He was well ahead of time, as we've learned today, with the clothing, you know, particularly the African wear, you know, pushing it to an extent where it's become the go-to thing now. I mean, that's what I prefer to wear. I mean, you can't. I don't think I would even feel comfortable wearing a Louis Vuitton. I've never worn any of that. Gucci or none of that. I've never.
Yeah,
you know.
I think it's a beautiful
plain
thing.
It's either a plain t-shirt for me
or an African.
African wear.
Yeah,
you know. But that's my choice. You know.
But it's beautiful to hear that because I mean, those are the sort of. I think that's what every Ghanaian should believe in. You know, and not every Ghanaian basically, but every African basically should believe in. We should believe in ourselves and we should believe in what we do. You know. I find it very unfortunate when I see Africans like putting Western ideas or Western designers over their African counterparts. Yeah. Because the opportunity those guys have had, we've not had half of it. We've not had one tenth of it. But we've struggled to get to where we are. You know, so it's beautiful and much more pleasing and appealing for our Africans to actually believe in what we do and take pride in what we produce, you know, and wear it with that pride.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah. So where do you stand with appropriation, cultural appropriation? Because we often, you know, like Gucci or some of these brands, they will take like our Henema, for instance, you know, the local sandals and put like a
massive price tag on it,
like 10,000 times the value, you know, and make of it.
Yeah.
Just recently, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but John Boyega, was wearing, you know, like a Kente style
cloth,
made
for Louis Vuitton,
you know, Virgil is
Ghana. Exactly. I was going to say that as well. You know, Virgil is gone basically. So. Yeah. I don't mind the idea that Virgil is using his roots.
But my question, I know that he would have a pass because of his heritage.
Yeah, but you look at Stella McCartney who picked up African print, and,
you know, things like that. Where do you stand, you know, as a designer yourself, who's from the motherland, who acknowledges the challenges that we face, the few opportunities, as you rightly mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, what is your take on things like that?
Interestingly, I'm not against what they're doing. Interestingly, I just believe that
we should use that as an opportunity to rise above them. If they are taking what we've got, you know, and trying to make it their way or make it theirs, we need to use that as an opportunity to rise above them and prove that, look, we do it better. That's all.
That's a very smart man with a smart answer. So you've been to university to study fashion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what I mean, you would say that yes, obviously you will learn a lot more once you go on the course. But what is your typical thing? Because you often have the argument that, you know, having that formal education doesn't necessarily
improve, you know, on what you already know.
But for you, what has been the benefit, or what has it added to
what you do? What I do already, to be honest, I've had this question come to me very informally in many ways, you know. People thought, won't it actually stifle the progress of your job? Won't it actually pull back what you already know, what you already do? But not at all, because for me, I learn from everybody, you know. So if I went into formal education, because I've not done fashion formally, so I went into formal education to actually pick up detailed technicalities of what people in industry are doing that I might not know or I might not be doing, you know. And for me, it's not taking anything from me, but I've gained a lot more knowledge and I've used that in very productive ways to improve what I do. So it's been rather beneficial to me.
To you,
yeah. I always see the glass half full. I always see things positively. So wherever I am or whatever I'm doing, I try to get the best from it, that I can utilize to make what I'm doing better.
You never stop learning.
Not at all.
That's kept him here, you know, over 3 decades. Tete Plaha is here with us on the Base Conversations. I've seen Stephanie Benson.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw she posted on her Instagram and Twitter that, you know, this was the first time that her whole family.
So an African.
So friend, just a bit of a background. Stephanie is a singer.
Yeah.
She's Ghanaian origin. Married to an Englishman, you know, and having that
African,
having the whole family come together.
Yeah.
And she's saying it's the first time, you know.
Yeah.
She was very proud of it. I saw the
some she's of the lovely. And, oh, she's lovely. She's an amazing person to work with, you know. She's
How was that?
Yeah, she's great.
Stephanie is very colorful with her. You know, she doesn't hold back.
Yeah.
If you follow her on Twitter or on social media.
Yeah.
This is a woman in her 50s, I suppose.
Yeah.
But looks very, 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 very good for her age.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, their family line is incredible, you know, very talented family.
Exactly.
With a singer, sister,
it's got the most beautiful daughters in the world, you know.
I was supposed to have a chat with her. I'm actually looking forward to it. So Stephanie, if you're seeing this, I want to come home.
Trust me, a lot of people want to visit Stephanie at home.
But not for those other reasons, though. But I want to meet the family, you know, because it looks like, you know, it's a pure vibe out there.
Yeah.
You know? How was the shoot like for you?
It was amazing. You know, when Stephanie spoke to me about it, that she wants me to do a collection for the family, I was like, yeah, that would be a brilliant idea, you know. But obviously, I need to take a lot into context, because Stephanie, she lives really far from me. She's about 100 miles away from me. She's in Tunbridge Wells, and I'm in Bedford, so you can imagine, 100 miles across. So I wouldn't be able to take her measurement, but she got it herself. She got all the measurements and sent it to me. But now I need to put the personality on paper. You know, Stephanie's classy, sophisticated, and very out, you know, like she's very bright, you know, clever. So I need to design something that will be really suitable for her personality and that she will love, you know. And I hadn't met her children at the time as well, but she sent me names, measurements, and pictures. You know, so I picked all those information, you know, to create something suitable for each individual. And I mean, it was just fortunate that it fitted them all so well, you know, and they all loved it. They were extremely happy, like each and every one of them. Well, and to get like a big family like that to be happy with whatever you've done, it was such a great achievement. And it was, I told you, like for me, those things are very fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know, if I manage to get, the individual satisfaction, when I manage to get that, that is what pays me, you know, it's greater than money. Yeah.
And, you know, it can't get colorful than that. You know, I saw the picture and it's, you know, for her to say how proud she was, you know, it was an incredible feeling. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that applies. Sad. Yeah. We will have to touch on that story about the mandolin before we round up. Yeah. But, you know, within these conversations, you know, you do a bit of research, you know, I know it's informal. We sit back and then have that organic chat.
Yeah.
Learn about you, what you've done. What I picked from the net was you come from a family line where this was in the 18s.
Yeah,
that your family line
fashion were, family. Yeah.
Yeah, they were creating the clothing for the military.
Absolutely.
Oh, so you've done
your research, man. You're so good. Yeah.
So that's actually true.
Absolutely true. Yes. My family, the Tabon family, that's mine. Mother's side, you know, my mom is Nelson, her father is Bishop Nelson, grandfather is George Aruna Nelson.
Okay.
And this Nelson family actually migrated from Brazil. I think they came.
Oh, so you got Brazilian, you?
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah. We'll check on your football skill later.
Oh, yeah, rubbish, man. Yeah. So basically, I think my brother has got a lot more detail about this story. He's really good with his in-depth knowledge on the family history. I mean, and I think 1836, they landed in Accra. You know, and they built the ship house where they produce clothing.
Ship house is still there, you know. I think
it's still there in Ghana somewhere. I think Salaba or so. Yeah. So, and interestingly, I'm not the only designer that come out of the family. You know, Dan Morton Taylors.
Oh yeah, that's
my uncle.
Oh,
he's
okay.
So from the same family. So I'm like, what, the fourth generation of designers coming from that same family. Oh,
fantastic.
You know, so yeah, it's sort of a family thing.
Yeah. I saw that, so that's interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
Caesar's House.
Just confirm that. And you've always, you know, utilized celebrities, you know. It's interesting how your thinking was back in the day where now influencer marketing has become like the trend now, you know, everyone was, but this is something that you've been doing from back in the day, you know, your connect to like the actors, the singers and all of that from back then. Did you read any marketing?
Good question though. I didn't, but I think it comes naturally to me. I know that, well, if a celebrity is seen wearing something, obviously it becomes like a desirable item for people.
It's easier now. I mean,
it's much easier now because of social media and such. But back in the days, I used quite a lot of them.
Mentality,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I was much younger as well. So, I mean, I didn't read marketing, but it comes to me naturally. To be honest,
who are some of your
celebrity. I did a lot for the Miss Ghanas back in the days, you know. Yeah, I did a lot for most of the Miss Ghanas back then, you know. And who else? What sort of people? And, I mean, ministers of state and stuff like that back in the days as well. Who else? Basically.
Is that an industry that if your child wants to get into, you would say?
Definitely will. My children are not very much interested in my field, to be honest. Zinabu is a lot more artistic.
You've got two children.
Zinabu and
Shelby. Did you marry early?
Oh, I'm married too late, man.
Too late. Okay.
Yeah, I should have kids in their 20s by now. But my children are... Yeah, old man. But I think Zinabo is much more the type that maybe in the future I can convince her into it. But I'm the sort of father who... I don't push stuff down my kids' throat because I never like that being done to me.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I find out what they desire and I support them with whatever they want to do. You know, I don't push stuff down their throat. Otherwise, obviously, they'll throw up. So you allow them to actually make informative decision based on what they see.
What they prefer.
And exactly. Mm. And then I give them the necessary support to...
So I've got two daughters as well and a son, but my the middle one, she's particular, you know, about her style and you know, she wants to wear her, you know, match her clothes.
Exactly.
But the eldest doesn't really care, you know.
Yeah, just get on with it.
Just
whatever.
Get on with it, whatever it is, you know. Yeah. Just, you know, just get on with life.
Yeah.
Not going to get into anything. But we rounding up soon, but I've got to ask, I know I asked you earlier when we were on the radio about TN Records. You know, back then, because I mentioned earlier how you guys used to do the fashion show when we have these Recognize or whatever it is, all these events that were going on in Accra back then, you know, when Accra was really Accra. It's not now that it's become so commercialized, you know. Back then, it was so, there was something about it, you know, it was quite a unique
experience.
There was experience.
A feel to it, you know. Yeah, there was a feel to it that, you know, we sort of losing
out,
it.
Yeah, when you go out back then, I don't know, there was some aura around.
Exactly,
you know,
and
Accra.
There's a connection with the people that we don't get these days.
No social media, none of that.
But
you get to interact with people, you enjoy conversation.
Yeah,
you know? And when you're really popular, you're really popular. I mean, because I remember when I posted that you're coming on the show, Eddie put a comment, Eddie Blay, he put a comment on there that, oh, this is a name that I've known from time, man.
Yeah.
And it's true, you know. Some of you guys were household names without social media. It wasn't easy back
that's
then,
true.
But
yeah,
it was the work that you guys were doing, you know. Yeah. So we go to events, we have fashion show, we have rap, we have everything, you know. Some of the artists now, Reggie and all of the likes, you know, they will come and perform. X-Dune and Adam.
Yeah. Back in the days, man.
So there was a names. Story that you and Bolaré owned TN Records.
So Bolaré will laugh his head off when he hears this, man.
Yeah. TN, shout out to my man Rookie. I think Rookie was the one who was putting that idea in my head that you know, you
really
the T was Tete Blood, and was not. That's that Nathaniel Bolaré.
Yeah, Bolaré, he's original name.
And you guys signed TikTok.
Oh, Bola is my
is
G, man. No, not at all.
No, not true.
Yeah. Bola and I didn't do anything in terms of music, man. Yeah.
Oh, my. But you are from a very popular area in Accra. You know, you lived around
North Kaneshi.
North Kaneshi. And if you take a trip down to the Adabraka area, you know, what was your favorite sport in Ghana? Like your favorite area to hang out?
A favorite area. You know, back then, I used to... It changes from time to time. You know what Ghana is like. But HM was like our place.
His Majesty's.
You know, His Majesty's, man. But shout out to Glenn and Nathaniel, man.
If you get in, that was bragging rights, you know. If you get into that club and we go back to secondary school, because at that time we were younger. I mean, I was like 16, 17.
Okay.
You know, Gasco then, you know.
Yeah, so if you manage to make your way through HM,
to get in there. I remember FM and the likes, you know, our Glens and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It was hard to get in.
Yeah.
You know, but I was able to go in. Shout out to my man Kofi Ouzouanza. He would take me in. He would make sure that I put on the shoes. When I was younger, I looked older, you know.
Yeah. You got away with it.
Yeah, I got away with it. I was able to get in. So when you go back to school, you had a bit of bragging rights. You
exactly.
Know, that you're able to. That was how I got in touch with a lot of the guys that, you know, were
that's cool,
running
man.
The scene.
But and, you know, another place that was really cool back in the days, man, Boomerang. Kiki was running Boomerang, man. Yeah.
That was in the 2000s.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had Glenn's, Miracle Mirage, Red Onion and the likes, you know, in the 90s. You had Mirage, His Majesty's late 90s.
Yeah.
And then he had Boomerang in the early 2000s, you know. And now you have Twist and all the likes, you know. Oh, man. Times have changed.
I love Twist, you know. Yeah. I mean, all the times I've been to Ghana on holiday, I always end up in Twist, man. There's a feeling there that actually...
It brings the old vibe.
Yeah.
Because I think it's run by guys that were... You know, partying back in the day, like
they know the deal, man. You know,
but these days I go to Accra. I don't go to the clubs, man. I don't. It doesn't.
Not a feeling,
no, I don't feel the vibe anymore. Yeah. I'd rather be at the beach or you know just. So I do radio and then go home. You know, we just go and chill, just vibe with the boys and stuff.
Yeah, but know? I mean, in general, I don't know, but I'll say, sort of. Age as well is playing a part on love for these clubs, you know, because now, I mean, I love to dance, but I don't see myself like standing in the club. You know, like I'd rather prefer to be in a jazz club, sitting and sipping something cool. Yeah,
have your
taking
cocktail.
It easy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, for me, it's gone from Charlie Boo Sisi to Charlie
to chill.
Let's, chill out. Charlie. Maybe the waist is tired now.
Yo, TP, man, it's always a pleasure anytime out.
Thanks, man.
We've hung around so many places in London and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
we need a summer back.
So oh, tell me about it. We need our lives back, my brother. Yeah, we do need that. We
two
need
things
to
before we
time.
Go, though. So, what is your five favorite tracks? Like, just comes to mind. Any genre at all?
Yes, sweet Charlie. This one, you put me on the spot, Charlie. you know something? Let me rather mention musicians that I love their stuff.
Of course.
Because
that's
yeah. Because Daku Vibes, he's amazing. I love his stuff. Like I was listening to Tomorrow. I've listened to it quite a few times, man. But anytime I listen to it, Charlie, I'm like this guy, man.
He's brought the good old Gav
vibe. Exactly. Yeah. He's brought the Gav vibe into the thing. You know, I love it. Yeah, and this other young guy as well, the Motowner. What's his name again? The bald one, young bald one.
Ooh, Kim Promise.
He's also very good. Oh, Promise is amazing. Damn. Yeah, I'll give
who's
it to Promise,
Motown
man.
Guy?
Yeah. Where's the name gone, man? You when I remember, I'll tell his name. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Davido as well. I like Shatta Wale as well. Yeah, I like Shatta's stuff. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, let's put all this aside. But, I think he's such a talented guy. Yeah,
very,
I love his stuff
very,
as well.
Very talented.
Yeah. Mr. Drew, that's the guy's
Mr.
name.
Drew,
the bald guy. Oh, okay. Yeah. I like Drew's stuff, man.
Fantastic stuff. You're still with the times, you know.
I appreciate good music.
Good music.
Man. Yeah, they're doing well. I love it. Trust me. Yeah.
I mean, Ghana music is African music in general, you know.
Very
good level.
Yeah,
so, are you looking to working with any of these guys, like the current crop of artists? And
I'm more than happy. Yeah, I'm more than happy to
who do you
dress
see
quite a lot of them.
Who do you see in
to be honest,
TP?
I think
Daku Vibes, I can see him in a on a
Daku
runway.
Daku would be cool in a TP.
On a runway.
Yeah, I think Drew will also be really cool in a TP. Drew's got like the modeling physique.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I see him in pictures, you know, he's got like tall, symmetric face. You know, those are sort of elements that could sell with clothes. Yeah. Who else? Yeah, even Shatta, man.
Shatta
is very symmetric, you know.
And
they call him Bena Abuba, Charlie. Very symmetric structure, you know. He can really
that's a model. He's going model.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Modeling look. Being a model is not always about being beautiful out there. No. It's about having unique striking personalities that will sell clothes, you know. That's why when someone like Alec Wek came on the scene, a lot of people were really critical about her look, and Calvin Klein was so crazy about her.
Yeah.
You know, because Alec has got something that you can't actually put a finger
darker
on,
than
but
the
you
average.
Can, exactly. Mm. The average person hasn't got it, and it's just unique, you know, and that's what brings it out.
You got to shout out KOD as well.
KOD, my G, man.
So, A bit of fun fact. So when he started at Radio Gold, because we all used to live in the same area.
Okay.
He was friends with
friends
with my senior man, Kofi, and my cousin, you know, Belinda. And so that Belinda is Benjamin's elder sister.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
All right.
So they've been friends from like, you know, from time.
Cool,
yeah.
Man.
No, like in the area. So I remember when KOD started at Radio Gold and I'll see him do his show. At that time, I also was having ambitions of being on radio. And
I'm like, that's cool.
I took particular interest. I never forgot that, you know.
Yeah.
So CFC area, and then he would do. I remember the one day that I think KKD was moving out, moving to London.
Yeah.
He dropped. I remember. I don't forget things. You know? So he dropped him at
a very retentive memory, man. Yeah.
Came to the house with his. What do you call it? I think with KKD's Benz at the time, came to the house, and then, you know, back on the radio and all of that stuff. You know,
so, guy KKD, man. Yeah, he loves his Mercedes, man.
It's good to see where he's taking the fashion world, you know, giving opportunity to bring in the music and the fashion together.
It's amazing, man.
It's commendable.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And the fact that he's even, you know, involving your
generation in it. Absolutely.
And the younger generation. My cousin is also involved in this recent one.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, I love to see that progression and the fusion of eras. It makes a compelling statement.
Absolutely.
You know, I know it's helping with our industry. Yeah.
That's why I was more than happy to do it when I got the message from him. I'm like, I will do this any day for you, my brother. Yeah.
Because you can't discount experience.
Yeah.
You know, you can't discount experience. You've been running fashion shows in the 96 and stuff, you know, which is incredible, man. But my brother, before you go, the Mandalay shooting, I mentioned that in the beginning.
Yeah.
That must be traumatizing for you.
Oh,
you know?
Tell me about it. You know what? Anytime I recount that actual.
So you actually are the same.
You know, what happened was we were actually inside Mudley Bay in the afternoon, just the afternoon before the guy started shooting. So we went to Mudley Bay. We're living just next door. We're residing in Luxor, which was next to Mudley Bay. So we walked into Mudley Bay because there was a pool party going on in Mudley Bay.
Mm.
Yeah. So we're chilling at a pool party in the afternoon. And interestingly, we're chilling directly under his window. That day, I'm telling you, when I think of this thing here, I just count my blessings of how lucky we've all been being there and experiencing that, you know. So when we left there, got back to the hotel, we're coming to take a bit of a nap and then go out in the evening. So I was lying on the bed and James walked in, and right when James walked in, we heard a shooting. And I was like, what was that? You know, we had a first round of gunshots. Like, I could just feel it that this is not fireworks, you know. So I was like, what was that? Because all you could hear, boom, boom, boom. I'm like, damn, what was that? James said, oh, I think it's some fireworks outside. And then we had a second round again. And then it became simultaneous. Like, you were hearing it. And then again and again. And I'm like, what the? So I got up, looked out there. I'm like, James, look. I think there's something really bad going on. He's like, no, I doubt it. I'm like, no. Let's look out. Check out there. See what's happening. You know? And then we saw the people in the park just running helter-skelter, basically. Doing just running all over the place. So I'm like, damn, this doesn't look good. And then another set of round going on.
Dear.
So we rushed to the other rooms where our other colleagues, it was 8 of us in total, you know? So we got all the boys together and we're like, look, this doesn't look good. Look out there. But at the time, like, all this was happening, we saw only one police car out there. So most of the boys were doubting what was going on. That could it be or could it not be, you know? And these people running, it could be that they are just having fun in the park, you know? Because it's not a very clear view. The park is just directly opposite the Luxor, you know? So you can't really tell what was going on. So we were like, I said, okay, let's put on the TV. If this is serious, it must be on news, you know. So we put on Fox, nothing on, you know. For the first 5 minutes, nothing on. All we could see after that was big headlines, massive shooting on the strip.
We're on the street, man.
Oh my God.
And we could hear the shooting going on live. So that's where everybody started panicking. And I was like, okay, let's update friends because and family, because obviously they've seen videos and pictures of us at the Madley Bay that morning, because we shared a lot of videos and stuff on social media that afternoon. So let's update friends and family that we are okay for now, and then let's plan what to do, you know. So I put it on my social media that there's a situation, but we are fine. We are all okay down here. We're just chilling. And then we started thinking, what could be the next move? You know, could it be like the Mumbai sort of style where they are going from one hotel room to the other, shooting people? So we planned that, look, whatever happens, we will die. So we fight
today
till we die, you know. So if we hear the gunshots coming closer, what we would do is, there are 8 of us, we all going to park ourselves in the toilet. They wouldn't expect us there. So if they break in and start shooting, we'll pounce on them, no matter who they are. Yeah, we're just making plans. Exactly. It wasn't. But yeah, it was critical, you know. I mean, I started seeing, like, I just started panicking. And Andy was like, Charlie, keep quiet, keep quiet, keep quiet. They might be coming closer. That's all, you know, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, knowing Andy.
That's very Andy, after. You know. Yeah, we can have a laugh. Now we're having a laugh at it. But at the time no, you know, everyone was in a state of panic, you know. Like, what's going to happen? What are they going to do? And everything. And even after they identified that it was just one shooter, he set an automatic rifle on one side and he was using the other shooting. And he shot himself by the morning. So by 5 a.m., we knew they found him. He was dead and everything. But we got down in the morning and the mood in the whole hotel has changed. Like, everybody has just delved into this melancholy mood suddenly.
Yeah, of course.
Everything is just gone dead quiet and solemn. You know, I went out there to have a look at the window where he was shooting from, you know, and I was thinking, damn, not coming here again. I need the next flight out of this state now.
Yeah, we give thanks. I mean, those who lost their lives, you know, prayers for their families.
I know.
Yeah, we can live on a high. Where can people find you? Your socials, your website?
Yeah, well, social media. Yeah, obviously, I sell a lot more on social media. So Instagram is Teteplaha, together, one word, as in TETTEHPLAHAR. You know, all in one way. That's my official business page.
Mm.
And then it's T Plaha for my personal page. If you want to see some fun stuff there, you can come over there and enjoy some jokes. But for the official business page, it's Tete Plaha. That's it. Facebook is Tete Plaha Designs as well.
But congratulations. Thanks. And, you know, thank we appreciate you. With all you've done for the Ghana fashion, African fashion, global fashion. Thank shining you, the light, keeping yourself, you know, evolving. You're still here, you know, which is the most important part, you know, that you're able to still give us, not just clothing, but also insight into how you got here, how you've sustained yourself and what's to come in the future, you know.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming on the show today, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Bass Conversations with your host, Teddy Abroqua, the Soundboy T.